to our traditional meeting with the GAC, and I hope you appreciated the reserved seating. This way we can keep an eye on you. So, what we're proposing to discuss today primarily is the final DAG, or DAG 5, and we'd like to raise some process points or timeline concerns in relation to that. As well, we may identify particular issues that we see as outstanding that colleagues around the table would like to raise. And if there's time, perhaps a couple of observations that we would like to bring to your attention in relation to the accountability and transparency review team work.
Can I respond?
Yes.
Thank you, Heather, and thank you very much for the seating. We appreciate it. And we also appreciate the very big turnout, so thank you for all those others coming to participate. We have actually been working on the assumption that the draft agenda would be the major topic, so we're really keen to talk about payment of fees, GAC advice in relation to operational matters, universal resolvability and blocking, and the review of strings for breaches of national laws, and also to talk about possible departures from GAC advice that may be coming on Friday. The XXX decision is up for decision, and possibly later than that, the geographic names issue, just to talk about the procedure that we want to adopt for that. But I think in fairness to the process, we're happy to talk about any issues arising out of the guidebook, and if you want to talk about timelines or those things, I'm sure we can fit all of those in. So how would you like to do that? If you have questions,
yes,
we'd be happy to receive them.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to call on Denmark first to make an initial comment.
Sorry, could I just interrupt that for a moment by saying that news has reached me of a very important election, and I'd like to be the first to congratulate you, Heather, on being elected as chair of the GAC. That's an extraordinary opportunity and a great honour.
Thank you.
And the whole board looks forward to having you serve with us as a liaison and to continue chairing this very important institution. Thank you.
Denmark, please.
Thank you. It's Julia Kahan from Denmark. We have noted on the ICANN website that the board might take a decision on DAG 5 on Friday 10th, which is the same day as the deadline for the public comments for the DAG 5, and that makes it sort of not possible to make an informed decision when the dates coincide in this manner. Thank you.
Did you want to respond to that, or shall we continue?
I think we're aware of the issue. Thank you very much.
New Zealand.
It was really a similar point, I think, that we have been quite distressed, I think, as both individually as people who need to consult with our governments and within the GAC as a whole, that the very, very late arrival of key important documents for these meetings. It seems to be more a matter of habit than exception these days. I'm thinking of, for example, the latest report on economic implications, but routinely the documents are arriving within the last week or so. We don't have time to consider them. I'm sure the board doesn't have time to consider them appropriately either. As a working method for the ICANN system, this seems to be something that needs fixing.
Thank you. And if I can just comment, as an example of the economic study, I mean, we shared it as soon as it was finished. And I mean, it's an independent study by the economists, and we'd hoped it might have come a bit earlier, but we shared it as soon as it was available and posted it for public comment, and very much appreciate your comments. And as I'm sure you can also appreciate, just a very large research load on different things and the policy documents and processes. But point taken, and thank you for sharing that.
If I may, I think the point is that the GAC was expecting the economic study to be published before a decision was made regarding vertical integration. And that's really the point of New Zealand's comment.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and check the exact documents. I believe the vertical integration document, economic study, was posted some time ago. The study that was just posted pertains to the new GTLD program and to new generic top-level domains.
Frank, I've just checked with staff because that's a matter of big concern, and we created this policy of a blackout so that there would be a period prior to the meetings, and I'm informed by staff that other than the strategic plan, which is not being considered at this meeting, no documents other than the economic study have breached the blackout period. So, and that's been true for the last three or four meetings. So in general, we think we're complying with the proposal that we set up because we have the same problem that you do, that we do not want papers coming in, and we can all remember the bad old days when for a variety of reasons they did. So I think, feel free to challenge that if you can, but the information from staff is that other than the economics report, which was outside of our hands, came in from outside, as it were, that we have in fact been meeting the principle that documents that are going to be considered at a meeting are not published inside that 3 weeks. You know, the DAG itself was published some time ago, well outside the blackout period.
If I can just expand my comments. The guidebook was actually published earlier than ever before this meeting, and it was our understanding that the GAC committed to responding 15 days in advance of this meeting, and I'm not sure whether that date was met or not.
Sweden, please.
Thank you very much, Heather, and this is Maria from Sweden. It's very good to see you all again here on ICANN and ICANN board. I would like to start by saying that I'm actually here in Cartagena. I was in Brussels, I was in Nairobi, and I was also in Seoul because of the fact, on behalf of the Swedish government, that we support the ICANN model. And both me and several of my governmental colleagues also spent actually hours and days in Guadalajara in Mexico at the ITU plenipotentiary meeting defending this model. That took a lot of energy, but it was very important, and we were very happy actually with the result, which means that actually ICANN is mentioned in this ITU policy document. So that is very, very important, I think, to have in mind. I mean, we like you, and we like to support you. And, that's actually why we're here.
Thank you. Thank
you.
We appreciate that.
But having said that, here it comes. I think this is a good way to start, you know, with the positive things. Then I can be a little bit rude. I'm not going to be rude, but I'm going to let my colleagues to be rude instead. Anyway, I just want to say that we have some concerns, of course, and those concerns are very important to see that they're going to be resolved because of supporting the model and trying to make progress in the future. So, I mean, for instance, this discussion about GAC advice, I mean, it feels a little bit ridiculous coming to all this meeting, traveling around the world to all these nice places, and then suddenly end up in a discussion whether this is advice or not that we're putting forward. That is a little bit crazy, I think. And it's also embarrassing to have that discussion with my minister, and she's not going to appreciate that. But I think all these kind of things are going to be resolved. But try to have this, as I told in the beginning, in the background when we had the discussion. And I give the floor to my colleagues and to Heather. Thank you.
Thank you, Sweden. European Commission.
Thank you, yes. I hesitate following Sweden when she suggested other colleagues are going to be rude to you, because you might get the wrong impression. I was asked, actually, you'll be pleased to know that we've really prioritised this issue at this meeting. We've had lots of discussions already. They haven't actually finished. I think we're due to continue tomorrow, and then we'll draft the communique. But I was asked by colleagues, actually, to give you a general overview of some of the, if I can call them higher-level issues, actually, that we have, concerns that we have about the process. The first issue I think we want to emphasise, particularly for members of the board who may be recent arrivals, is that the GAC has been giving advice on new GTLDs for an awful long time. Our first substantive primary advice, which we refer to, is the GAC principles on UGTLDs that were adopted and given to the board in March 2007. I think that was before the policy on UGTLDs was actually adopted by the board. Since that time, the GAC has continued to engage regularly with the board, the GNSO, ICANN staff to explain its concerns regarding the PDP and the implementation proposals set out in the various and consecutive versions of the DAG. In addition, we've continued to give advice in the form of communiques. I think every communique since then, actually, we've provided a chapter on new GTLDs. I managed to find 11 letters from the GAC that we've sent. I have to say that the main reason we've had to do this is to repeat the advice we gave in the principles. If you go back to the principles, our advice actually is very consistent with that set of documents. So we've been giving advice for a long time. And, the GAC appreciates very much the efforts made by many in the ICANN community to understand and accommodate the advice of the GAC during that period. But we remain concerned that many of the original public policy issues that we raised remain unresolved in the latest version of the DAG. And that may well be, actually, we think, on reflection, a process problem caused by the fact that when the board adopted the policy from the GNSO, at that point in time, there were already differences between the policy proposed and the GTLD principles. And this is something we had been recognized and discussed with the GNSO at that time. But that seems to be the root of the problem. That's why it's been difficult to resolve those two positions since then. Moreover, the most recent letter of the 23rd of November from the chairman of the board confirmed that many of the concerns of the GAC remain unresolved. And in addition, the GAC notes that the board has decided to explicitly reject GAC advice in two specific cases related to the objection process and requirements the government must pay fees to file objections, and the results of the first phase of the economic study. The GAC is increasingly concerned that GTLD applicants, many of whom have made significant investments in their business models, have a legitimate expectation that the process for introducing new GTLD should have been concluded by now. The GAC is also mindful, however, that major stakeholder groups within ICANN, and we saw this in the joint meeting we had this week already with the GNSO, major stakeholder groups such as the business and intellectual property constituencies do not believe that the most recent version of the DAG reflects their advice and concerns. And then I have a section in my own notes here. Obviously, I'm referring to them on individual issues, but my colleagues have already started to raise those with you, and I'm sure we'll go back to them afterwards. Finally, in view of the board's determination reflected in the 23rd November letter, a response to the GAC's comments on DAG 4, that it cannot accept certain elements containing GAC advice, the GAC assumes the board is invoking the provisions in the ICANN bylaws to seek a mutually acceptable resolution of these differences and looks forward to engaging in the discussions foreseen in the bylaws to attempt to resolve situations where the board has decided to reject GAC advice. A more generic comment, actually, that came up in our previous session with the CCNSO and which colleagues wanted to share with the board relates to an issue that that Sweden's already raised, actually. And that's the fact that ICANN's a controversial model. You know that in government terms, actually. It's constantly challenged. Many of the GAC members here invest a significant amount of time defending that model in other intergovernmental organizations. And as taxpayers, you'll be pleased to know that we're under increasing pressure to justify travel and mission expenses to meetings such as this. One justification, or the main justification that we give to our hierarchies and our ministers for coming here, is that we have to help this private sector self-regulatory body make sure that it does not cross any public policy red lines and to develop policies in the general public interest. That's a hard sell when we appear to be travelling at great cost to repeat the same advice. I'll be frank, actually. When you go back through all of these communiques and you go through all the letters and the minutes of our meetings and the exchanges with yourselves and the board and ICANN staff and other stakeholders, we're repeating the same advice all the time. And to rub salt into the wound, if I can use that English expression, it's also difficult to justify to ministers why we're coming when the latest development is that we may have to pay to give advice. When we have specific problems with GTLDs and we want to tell you we've got a specific problem from a public policy perspective, for example, because there's a country name involved or a geographic name that raises concerns in our countries, that's a very difficult issue to reconcile with the defence that we have of the model. And to be frank, there's a growing concern amongst GAC members that the current state of affairs, you know, is ammunition for those who want to attack the ICANN model. Because we have to go home, we have to justify why we're travelling to protect it and why we take the positions that we do. And that the current issues in GTLDs, in many ways, highlight some of the problems this is creating for us back at home. And finally, a small point. I recall from the discussions we had in Brussels, actually, there was a suggestion, I think it was repeated in the letter, that it's not much good if the GAC express concerns about things and can't provide any solutions for you to consider. And well, I'd actually challenge that on the main basis that, you know, I think our view and the view of the board in the past has been that we're an advisory committee, that the supporting organisations in ICANN define policies and they're adopted by the board or rejected by the board. The staff implement them, and the GAC's job is to provide advice. I think the idea that we shouldn't come to you with concerns unless we've got alternative implementation mechanisms suggests you're trying to broaden our remit in some way that I think we healthily, for healthy reasons, want to resist. I challenge that. But that said, actually, I'll give you an example. The objection procedure is one that we discussed before, and I noticed, Peter, that you want to talk about it today. It seems to us that it's overcomplicated, the reflections on this we've had so far. And I'll put this to you. We could have a procedure where we see the list of applications that are made, and when there's a geographic issue at stake and the government raises an objection, you might encourage the applicant and the government concerned to go away and talk about it and not come back until they have a solution. Now, you might think that's a radical idea, but I suspect some, and certainly some in the CCNSO, will recognise that that's existing ICANN policy in case of redelegation. It's a policy approach that's been defended by ICANN, it's been accepted by the GAC, that until the government and the registry operator come to, or the prospective registry operator come to an agreement, then ICANN can't become involved. I think there's a solution there for us, based on precedent. So that's just to try and be very constructive about one specific problem that we have. But I hope you appreciate that these comments from GAC members here today are intended to be constructive, and they were meant in that spirit. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. And obviously, we take them all on as very constructive. I just wonder how useful the debate will be if we pick up any one of those long list of issues and go into them in any detail now. I mean, I can make the point, for example, that I can clearly distinguish between an individual country wanting to take part and being required to use the objection process, and distinguish that from the GAC giving advice. ICANN doesn't take advice from individual governments. Under the current structure, we take advice from the GAC. So if there's an individual country wishing to make an individual objection to any particular application, it strikes me that that's a very different issue from saying and now GAC members have to pay to give advice. I mean, I can distinguish those two. I can see a situation in the objections process where if the GAC wants to take a position as the GAC and make an objection to a string and can easily make an example that it's doing so for reasons of public interest, it's an organ of ICANN, that there may well be a reason why the GAC shouldn't have to pay an objection fee, because that's a different issue. So I just wonder whether, you know, we could take each one of those points that you've raised, and you know, I think my last substantive response was 24 pages. Because, you know, as you say, you keep giving advice and we keep obviously also responding to it. It's not that there's a silence from our part. So I just wonder how we can make this a productive sort of exchange today without going into the really deep detail in relation even perhaps to the wording of some of the things, which perhaps is what we have to do. Perhaps we have to all get together and have a half day or a day session together and work through these things. But anyway, let's Bruce had a
I guess I have a question and then perhaps also a suggestion. But the question for you, Bill, you said the original principles of the GTLDs, which, as you know, I was involved in the very early days when they were developed, and certainly the GNSO at the time tried to take most of those into account. Can you be specific at what you think the remaining ones are? The ones that I'm aware of was geographic. Is there anything else on the list? Just going, because I think you're right. I think if you haven't got agreement on the principles, then it's hard to start getting agreement on the implementation. So what specifically, other than geographic names, which I believe we are going to meet with you this week to discuss in more detail, what else was in that principles where do you think we're divergent?
Well, I don't want this to turn into a monologue, actually. My answer would be I'd refer you to the letters and the communications that we've been sending for the last 3 or 4 years, because all of those issues were covered in the principles. And they're all there, actually, and then they're repeated again and again and again. And I don't think we can, if we start listing them now...
Okay, so you're saying that's a long list, then?
That's a long list, actually, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the impressions I had from the discussions that we've had here, and I stand corrected by colleagues, but they asked me to speak to this point because we prepared a summary already of our working group discussions, and that's basically
because I think the perception of the board is that we're converging and that we're working through the issues, but it sounds like an entirely different opinion, which is that we still have wide gaps. And so then my suggestion, which is what Peter was referring to, is how do we move forward? I don't think these one-hour meetings are working because I hear you say the same thing pretty much every meeting, and that seems that we're not making good use of this time. And maybe what we should be doing, I mean, I'd be in favour of 2 solid days together instead of you guys meeting in a room and us meeting in another room. Maybe we should just be working through and make sure we understand the issues that you're raising. And secondly, us try and articulate how we think we're dealing with those issues. Maybe we're wrong. But in many cases, we think, taking geographics, we think we've moved substantially from where we were 2 or 3 years ago on that topic to where we are today. And speaking personally, I didn't think the gap's that big. I thought we could close that gap this meeting. But to close that gap requires actually getting in the room and talking it through.
Thank you, Bruce. I think Rod has a quick comment, and then Germany.
Yes, and just to get back quickly to Frank on your good comment on the mountains of documents that come out of ICANN, but just check the records. The commitment of the GAC was to post, I think, documents such as the guidebook 15 working days before the start of the public meeting. This guidebook was published 16 days beforehand or 24 calendar days, and our understanding of the GAC's position was if they had that much advanced time, they could share opinions and views at the meeting. I still want to just acknowledge the huge amount of work that the GAC does and the mountains of paper that heads your way, and also that, you know, there are a number of cases certainly in the guidebook where your advice has changed positions from what might have been approved, for example, by the GNSO.
Thank you, Rod. Germany, please.
Yes, just an observation in respect of the timelines. We appreciate that this 15 days has been used and accepted, but you have to see the applicant guidebook is 400 pages, and it's not a usual paper you have for discussion. It's a paper you really have to analyze, and I think in this case you have probably have to have other measures to check this. I want to come back to the question of geographic names, because there was a question. And I just want to come back first to the position Bill was already mentioning. Yes, the question of how to protect geographic names was mentioned already in our GAC principles, and that's almost 4 years ago. We mentioned and highlighted these issues. ICANN should avoid country, territorial, places, names, and country, territorial, regional language or people's description unless in agreement with the relevant government or public authority. And that is a guiding principle, I think, that still stands for the GAC, and I hope also for a broader community. And we were quite a lot of involved and tried, yes, in a positive way to follow this discussion. And the first idea I recall was to have a list and how this list can be extended and what kinds of name can be on this list. And then we came to the conclusion, okay, maybe a list is can never be exhaustive because there may be some understanding for geographic names that is not is different and will not be on the list. And on the other hand, even a geographic name may be used as brand or whatever, and in this context, if there are clear safeguards, I think nobody would object, with the exception of really certain very important geographic names. And I think in so far the concept as it is something we can agree. We have the country territory names, we have the city names, we have the sub-national divisions. This is okay. You know, in general, we have also UNESCO regions. Also, examples we think these are blocked. Nobody else but with governmental support, nobody can use them. Other names are not blocked for governments, but if they are geographic things, there should be certain safeguards that they are not used for as geographic names. And that is exactly what my understanding would be. And if we have this understanding, then it is important that we have an adequate process for objecting. It is part of, first of all, that's a question of the fees that is has already been discussed. Because I just want to recall that we are not talking on this the costs for the objection fees. It is the question if some applicant has applied, delivered this application formally, and somebody from outside is filing an objection, then there is normally no way for the applicant not to respond. Therefore, he will respond, and then we'll end in the litigation, in a panel review, and then it depends on the decision. There will be somebody who has to pay the price. In some cases, probably it will also be the geographic region that has to, or government that has to pay that. And then we are speaking on sums of money which are significantly higher than the normal objection fees. That is just for recalling. And then, if I come to the process itself, I think some of the criteria for that the panel has to check or decide on are not reflecting the needs of the governments. For example, I wonder how could a government explain or object not knowing what an applicant would do with his top level domains, and say this is causing damage to me. I don't know how this will how he should do that. The second question, I don't even know whether a government can say we are targeted community, because maybe some brand owner will use it for really internal purposes, but nobody will know it from the outside. And that is, we are in a really legalistic situation and tricky situation where I do not know how we can solve it. I think it's a rather, yes, conflict-orientated situation and not consensus-orientated situation. And that is something we would be very like and encourage the board to improve. Thank you.
So can you just clarify? I didn't quite understand the first question. I agree with much of your recitation of how we've moved from those principles to the position that you described in terms of what's now protected. So I was with you all the way until you started asking the first question. If you could just help me, I didn't quite understand what the first question was.
What first question?
Well, you said you had two questions, and you ended with two questions, and I didn't really hear what the question and the... Well, if there wasn't a question, that's fine. That means it's my fault.
Yes, there were two problems. One problem was the process itself, that you have to pay objection fee, and it is a rather a conflicting process. And the second one is the criteria in the decision making or the decision making of the panel. They do not meet governmental requirements.
Yeah, we thought we were going to have a separate session on geographic names at some stage, so we might get into the detail. I've actually asked, I don't know whether that we were up to, John, are you able to put up the paper? Is there somebody with access to one of these screens, or have they been switched off? Who's got the... So while we're waiting for that, can we perhaps move off geographic onto another question?
Yeah. Italy, please.
Okay. Magic word advice, something immaterial. The Accountability and Transparency Review team is doing a great work in order to try to elaborate about the interaction of the GAC with the board. So I want to stress this point. The story is the GAC is requested by the board for an advice. And then the GAC issued the advice to the board. The real point is that perhaps there is not a post-advice interpretation, let's say. The board should interact sooner as possible with the GAC in order to understand where are implementation problems. If the advice is really understood in all these facets, because often the GAC that is working for consensus, the expressions are quite general, let's say. So this is something that is missing, in my opinion, because what happens that the board instructs the staff to verify the implementability, blah, blah, blah. Then the GAC, in some cases, knows of problems from the staff and not from the board, and the relation is exactly GAC with the board. And then... ICANN is taking decisions on issues, and in the end the GAC interpret that the advice has been rejected. So, and this is why we didn't have an explanation before, and I think you don't like that GAC says that an advice has been rejected, and you think that you behaved not in such a way. So we need a more quick interaction just after the advice has been issued.
If I may, thank you, Stefano. I think it's fair to say that from a GAC point of view, there really is a lot of interest in clarifying and ensuring that on both sides it's clear how advice is being processed, GAC advice is being processed, by staff versus board, and how they are communicating the status clearly of that advice, whether it's been accepted or rejected, and providing the rationale for those decisions. On a more positive note, there was a letter recently in response to our comments on DAG 4, and in that letter there was at least a clear indication there on two issues that the board has rejected GAC advice, and so that at least brought clarity to that issue. I believe Kenya would like to make a comment that's perhaps a bit more broad regarding all the inputs, including GAC advice that is received by the board. Kenya?
Thank you very much, Heather. Mine is just to begin with to appreciate all the efforts that the entire ICANN community, you know, continues to make towards accommodating GAC advice. However, as you've heard from many of my colleagues, we still feel there are quite a great number of issues, public policy issues, that are still pending and remain unresolved. Broadly, we'd like to see a process put in place that kind of ensures that inputs and proposals, opinions, originated from, you know, various stakeholders, not just from GAC, but from various stakeholders, you know, can be traced, and also that a thorough and reasoned explanation of the decisions taken, including the rationale used and data sources used to make those decisions. So we'd like, you know, those provided. And then for GAC in particular, I think it's very important, you know, for Bo to give us an update on the most recent, some of the very many pending issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Kenya. And to put more fine a point on it, the summaries that have been posted following public comments, we don't consider them as meeting the need that we are describing here. Would someone from the board like to respond?
I think we generally agree. I think this is exactly the same message that we heard with the President's strategy consultation. They started to take steps in relation to that, and very much the same advice is now coming from the Accountability and Transfer Review Team. The board has expressed the same view as well, and I think what we will be taking the recommendations from the Accountability and Transfer Team, Transparency Review Team, who have put some attention into how this can be done. I think it's clear there's a community requirement for this, and we'll be moving forward to do it.
Thank you. Do I have any more requests? UK, please.
Thank you, Heather. It's Mark Carvell from the UK Ministry, the Department for Business, Innovation and Skills. So my ministry is not an ICT regulator. We do a lot of policy work with regard to the ICT sector, but promoting the interests of business within government and internationally, and promoting innovation is a key role for us. It's part of our mandate. So the new GTRD's initiative is something we really look to as an important contribution to innovation and promoting opportunity for business, promoting competition in the global economy. So it's something that we've always supported in principle, and we will contribute to all the processes to achieve that, and that's the approach we've been certainly taking. But we're still not confident that the benefits to be derived from this are going to outweigh the costs. This is still a fundamental problem we have, and that's why the comment about the timing of the economics paper, the second phase economics paper, is so important, because that's crucial to establishing the fundamentals of what this initiative is all about. And to have received it on Friday just is desperately unhelpful for us as the policymakers advancing and supporting initiatives to promote competition and to both promote innovation, not to have these key supportive documents, which we're going to have the data and the analysis that supports the initiative. And at the same time, we in government, we've picked up on the DAG as soon as it was published. I ran it across stakeholders in the UK. I ran it to the Intellectual Property Office in the UK, because the most representations we've received have been from brand owners, the rights holders. They're the ones who've been the most agitated about this. I think they also recognised the potential opportunities, but the big issue for them was the costs. And we've discussed in the UK the rights protection mechanisms contained in the DAG. We've pushed for changes. We've had very good dialogue with Kurt and the team. We've had excellent interaction. It's been very helpful, being very open, and we really appreciate that. But we're still, I think, not there as regards rights protection. It's there are problems in the two key mechanisms, the Trademark Clearinghouse and the URS, and we see the contributions coming from the rights protection community, from the organisations, from WIPO, Inter, in Europe, ECTA, also expressing the same key problems. The rights protection mechanisms are still not effective enough. And that's what's coming through to us in the ministry. So it's a problem. And I think if you're really hoping to sign off the guidebook this week, I think that's something you really ought to reconsider. We've worked hard. We've gone through the detail. We've consulted stakeholders. We've listened to what people in the community are saying. And we think you're not there. You're not. You've been doing a lot of valuable work. You're putting a lot of effort into it in a very open way, but you're not there. That's our main problem with this. And as I say, we want to see it happen. We want to see innovation and competition really take off, and the global information economy benefit as a result. But I just don't think you're there yet. And we have the detail. We're going to capture it in the communique, which Bill has referred to earlier, the detail of that. I won't go into the detail now. There's a lot of very detailed points that, if they were looked at carefully again, maybe we could get there in time for San Francisco. I hope so. Thanks.
Thank you very much, United Kingdom. I would just add that because we've been meeting with various parts of the community while here in Cartagena, that the UK experience seems to echo some of the comments that we've received from colleagues here that are primarily from the private sector in particular, and business, the business constituency within the GNSO, for example, have expressed significant issues that they see as remaining. And when you hear that the support is coming mainly from the registries and registrars who have a particular relationship to this organization and to the impacts that would follow from introducing the new GTLD program, I think that's really given colleagues around this table pause. So I would just add that really to emphasize what the UK has said. I have Germany requesting to speak. Please, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I just fully want to second our colleague from UK, because this rights protection issue is also a very important issue for our country. And I want to add one issue that is raised by our community in particular, that is to certain forms of protection mechanisms that are accepted or agreed now in the final guidebook, they require substantive examinations from be undertaken by the in the jurisdiction where this trademark was granted, and our and many others jurisdictions don't have this extended substantive examination, and therefore we feel that this is some kind of discrimination of our trademark, and it causes quite a lot of problems in our community, because we frankly from our governing cannot accept such a regulation thing.
Norway, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. It's Erno Storm from Norway. I just also wanted to echo the strong voice of UK here. So thank you very much for that. I think that covers a lot of the concerns that a lot of the GAC members do have. On the other hand, an example of a positive input, I think we had an exchange here with Kurt in the sort of first days we had here, and like we were concerned about this weakening of the post-delegation procedures for geographical names, that you not sort of that you have taken out this will comply with the court decision and now sort of may implement. And I believe that you do have had some exchange with the CCNSO on that, and I'm aware of the response from Kurt. So I just wanted to hear a confirmation by the board that actually that you still intend to retain the wording, or at least the powers of governments to retain that was described in the DAG 4, on that you will accept a court ruling of any sort of disputes when there is a letter of support or non-objection when you have GTLDs of geographic names that have been given that protection, like city, capital city names, etc. So I just wanted to have that confirmed.
Well, I think we can have Kurt confirm it again if we want to. Kurt, you perhaps repeat the position that you reported earlier.
Hi, thank you, Peter and Heather, and thank you for the comment. Now, since your comment, we received a similar comment from the CCNSO and have had time. Thanks. And have had time to go back and analyze the guidebook. And we'll change the language in the letter. We will also put language in the guidebook proper, not in the letter, that ICANN will follow the rulings of courts in those jurisdictions where the geographical names are.
Yes, thank you for that. But that's at least that's an example that we are moving forward. But as sort of you've heard today, I think a lot of the countries do feel that we are not there yet. So, but at least there are progress. So that's a positive sign. Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis. Well, while you're doing that, let me just perhaps acknowledge Mark. I just to say thank you for that description of the process that goes on. I think sometimes when we have these exchanges and we talk about documents not being done in time, etc., we do appreciate that many, if not all the delegates are doing the kind of process that you described, and we also, because we have to do that ourselves, we understand what it means to take this material to various interest groups in your companies, collate their responses, synthesise it, explain it to them, because perhaps they've got it wrong and you've been here and you know these things, so really we do want to go on record as acknowledging the effort that goes into being a member of the GAC and coming here and contributing. So thank you for that. Dennis.
Yes, thank you, Peter. I hear the phrase "not there yet" on a number of occasions, and I wonder, is there any guidelines from those countries who say we're not there yet as to when we will know, or when you will know we are there? Is there any metric? Because I'm sure it's very frustrating for you, and it's equally frustrating for us. You know, it's like the child in the back of the car. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? We need to know when we will be there. And we're certainly trying to work on that. But it would be very helpful when GAC members say we're not there yet, whether you could also illustrate what the destination, when we will know that we are there. I'm not saying this is an easy thing, but it doesn't add specificity to the discussion, just to know we're not there yet.
UK, US, you wanted to respond to that particular point? Yeah.
Thanks. I talked about lack of confidence that the benefits are going to outweigh the costs. I think we will know whether we're there or getting very near there when we understand that those benefits do outweigh the costs. That was, that is a key sort of turning point. If we can get to that position, that the benefits for business, for the global economy, for opportunity for business, are going to be greater, scaled up, greater than the costs to brand owners and those who are going to have to shell out big time in order effectively to subsidise, in their view, perhaps subsidise a process. So it's a question of getting to that confidence level based on effective analysis and understanding of what the opportunities are and mitigating to best efforts the downside. which is what the brand owners see. I mean, it's that there's a tremendous downside. So there's a kind of balance, a tipping point, if you like, and we're not there yet. And when we are confident that we are there, then we might see the end date coming up. We've all invested huge amounts of time in this. We don't want it to see it all collapse into a pile, you know, in the middle of this room. We all want to see something come out of this protracted process. So that's my response to what you're saying. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, UK. I'm going to give the floor to Malta because he's next in the list, and I suspect he's going to say something about the public interest, and then over to the United States.
Yeah, thanks very much. I think that you know, much of what needed to be said has been said, but it's really very much reinforcing essentially the message that's being conveyed by my really UK colleague, that you know, when really we come here, we meet as a GAC. We have done that really following very substantial consultation in our respective countries with various constituencies. I think that there's a group that really speaks for the public interest. I'm sure that every sector group is speaking for the public interest in a way. But in our case, I think that you know, we're speaking to the broadest public interest. We speak with really community groups, with business. We're of course reflecting really government interest in this, and this is why one of the things that really surprised me, a comment that I heard at the opening of this meeting, is that there was a sense that our views were converging on this issue of really GTLDs. I mean, I find that really very surprising in view of the comments and the representations that we have made in this, that, you know, we're not aware that, you know, we seem to be really crossing each other in our communications. And I think that's a concern that we have in this, and that we feel that there was something that we need to address. I think that we spent an awful amount of time discussing these issues, and it's not a country taking a position, an exception to these. I think that the representations that we have made, they represent a consensus. And we feel that we have not had really the benefit of, in many instances, either a response to key suggestions that are being made, or in the latest communication, is the rationale behind really turning this supposedly informed advice down. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Malta. United States, and then I think Peter has some comments.
Thank you, Heather. I really don't need to take very much time because my colleagues have been quite eloquent in expressing our views as well. It is the whole issue of feeling confident that the benefits will outweigh any cost and making sure that we can mitigate the cost. And so it is confidence. We are held accountable to our governments and to our citizens. So we are actually held accountable, each and every one of us, and there is an expectation that's quite legitimate that there will be some return on this investment. Okay, there's significant resources that are being applied. What I would be curious, though, Dennis, and for your views and the entire board, is how will you know when you are there? How are you making that determination? Since we haven't seen a rationale for the decisions that have been taken, that's very clear. How is it you will arrive at that determination? Thank you.
Peter or the board? Someone want to?
We're going to have the pleasure of calling on Bertrand, who's in this unusual position of not being on the GAC but not quite being on the board. But we're going to claim him, so we're going to ask if the GAC would mind if Bertrand spoke.
Hello, everybody. It's indeed an interesting position. A quick comment on that. The discussion on the economic study is addressing actually two issues. One is whether there should be a GTLD program or not, and whether the overall benefit of opening up is positive. I think no one, and I've been participating in this for the last 4 years, I don't think anybody in the community at any stage has drawn the conclusion from the two first rounds that we should stop, never do a new GTLD program, not open. There is a convergence. The agreement within the GNSO was to launch the program or to decide the program in 2008, and the GAC and all the other actors have worked consistently to do this. The question is, how is it shaped? And this leads not to the global benefit of opening up versus not opening up. It goes to whether there is undue burden to certain categories of actors, because the cost-benefit ratio is not only on the global scale, it's also for different categories. And when you evaluate a cost-benefit ratio, you have two ways to make it good. Either you increase the benefits, and it is very difficult to evaluate because it is an innovative process, and we don't exactly know. Something will be very beneficial, but it's a big question mark. Or you can try to reduce the costs. And the reason why Mark and others are saying the main challenge and main problem today is that the intellectual property actors are the most vocal and the most concerned, is because they are the ones where the costs are anticipated as being the biggest, because it's not only the application, it is the fear of defensive registrations at the second level, and it is the fear of having to get into a defensive registration at the top level, which is even worse because it's getting into a program where they don't know what they could do with this for many of them. So I just wanted to interject this because at that stage, one of the main elements is not so much to evaluate whether there is a high benefit for the brand owners in the opening up. It is to have a clearer understanding of what the costs are for them. The ones that they clearly evaluate is simple. But the biggest problem is the big question mark of the unexpected costs that they can anticipate. And here we have two questions. For the second level registration, there is a question mark. But if something goes wrong, the process can be tightened up later on. So the question will be, is the possibility to tighten up the control and the compliance enough to reduce the fear so that the anticipated costs are lowered? But on the top level domain, is the mechanism that is in place enough to alleviate the fear they have that they will have to get into a defensive registration? And to answer Suzanne's question as best as I can, I think if we consider there are other issues, if we consider that one of the main stumbling blocks is this fear, we will know we are there when the specific community will say, it's not everything we would like, but we can live with it. And it's the same for the GAC. On geographic names, the GAC may not get everything it wanted, but if there is a sufficient alleviation of fear, there will be a moment where the cost of continuing to wait will then override the benefit of doing it. Thank you.
Thanks, Petrol.
Are there any more requests to speak on this? Norway.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick remark on Bertrand's comments on the compliance issues. Like we heard when we had the meeting with GNSO, the business constituencies expressed concern that there were currently compliance issues and compliance problems, and they will not be less when you open up for quite a lot of new registries. And that is not our comments. This is from the business constituency in the GNSO, that this is might also be a huge challenge on the compliance issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Norway, it might be worth noting that one of the outstanding issues that isn't specifically aimed at the new GTLD program, but more broadly, is in relation to the law enforcement recommendations regarding due diligence and the registrar accreditation agreements. The GAC endorsed those proposals, and so we would be very interested to have a fulsome response as to exactly what of those recommendations have been adopted or will be adopted in terms of due diligence and those agreements. Rod?
Yes. Just to speak to the good question that Mark raises from the United Kingdom and other parties, and Bertrand, I think, articulated well regarding economic costs. It is generally extremely difficult to estimate the value of innovation. That's just a general economic research issue because it's very difficult to unpredict the unpredictable future as opposed to the forecastable conventional future that you know from history. There are some, you know, possible, you know, data points that do seem helpful, and you know, and if there's not a master database I know of globally in one simple place of material risk to corporations. But one thing that I would observe is that in the United States of America, corporations have to file 10K documents, and a requirement in a 10K document is to disclose material financial risks. And a cursory review shows that the only listings of material risk relating to to domain names and or any registrations or value of domain names has been with respect to the financial transfer of assets relating to registrars or registries. And what that could suggest and should suggest is that corporations that take their responsibilities very seriously with respect to disclosure, to the extent any corporations felt that defensive registrations, present or future contingent, were material enough to require disclosure in their financial statements, I believe have a legal obligation to do so. And to our knowledge, that has not been a practice. Now, that does not answer the question, and I'm not suggesting for a moment that answers the question specifically of the precise benefit, because again, without an ability to estimate innovation, it's very difficult to do. It does provide a boundary condition, and I think one data point that is relevant.
Thank you, Rod. Switzerland.
Thank you. First of all, I have to say that for a country like ours, there are 15 days of having time to go through the documents are also quite problematic, also because of the reason that we are currently trying to save another multi-stakeholder process, which is the IGF, which also consumes a lot of resources. The point that I would like to make is that, first of all, we share the concerns that have been expressed by our colleagues. And in addition to that, I would like to add one point. We have been talking about lack of confidence about avoiding costs for at least certain stakeholders, which I think is an important point. At the same time, I would add that there might also be a lack of confidence in that this actual system as proposed provides for that the global stakeholders can really profit from the opportunities that new GTLDs would give, in the sense that also stakeholders which are of a lower financial and other powers will be able to profit from their program. And I think if there will be some time, you could maybe develop the confidence of the global community and how they can profit from the opportunity of new TLDs. And in that connection, I would say that we are interested in the work of the joint SOAC working group on applicant support, because we think that this is an important issue, that we should not only talk about economic interests of the big stakeholders, but maybe also the smaller ones, and also social interests. Thank you.
Can I just quickly respond to the people who aren't as familiar with the process, aren't misled? The reference to 15 days was the GAC's reference to 15 days. The GAC said that the GAC would respond to us if it had the material more than 15 days in advance. That's in a GAC letter to us. We posted the guidebook 24 days in advance. I agree with you. 15 days is an incredibly difficult time to respond, but just be clear, we're just responding to the GAC's indication that the GAC would do that within 15 days. 15 working days.
I think we may need to revisit that, and I believe the comment from Germany was that 15 days is notionally a useful target, but when you're getting hundreds and hundreds of pages of documents on complex issues all at the same time, then the 15 days really starts to look inadequate.
So it was ambitious, I agreed.
Ambitious, okay. Switzerland, you wanted to respond?
Just a quick comment on this. I think the 15 days were thought as the minimal requirement, but that does not prohibit to be as early as possible in order to facilitate our work. Thank you.
European Commission? Bruce, go ahead.
Just a really quick comment on scale. The documents actually are separated into what's called a clean version and a red line version, and so most of us read the red line version, assuming that we've previously read the full version at some point. So 15 days, it's not that unreasonable for the red line, I would think, but except when there's a new document like economic studies that needs time. But just to put context, it's not like it's a fresh set of 400 pages. The actual amount of changes in the latest version is not 400 pages of changes.
If I may, I think the point is that there have been a number of separate documents, including the DAG, and that if the issue is complex and governments require time to consult and to brief based on the latest developments, that really does take a lot of time. And I think we need to be very clear on that point, because I think this gets lost again and again, and governments feel that they have to explain again and again around this lengthy process they have to undertake in order to develop positions and gain the approvals they need to come here and be effective. European Commission.
Yeah, sorry to prolong the agony on this one, actually, but I feel a bit guilty sitting here in silence, because it was 15 days came for me during the meeting in Cairo. When we met with the board, and I'm sorry if there's a misunderstanding, but my proposal was that it should be at least 15 days before you would even consider it at a meeting. If it came later than that, we'd defer it to the subsequent GAC meeting or to an intersessional period. I think there was no indication, actually, certainly no intention on my part, that 15 days would mean that we would give advice on something. It was just that if it came less than 15 days, we would not be able to consult with colleagues in capital, and we would gratefully receive a document with a request for advice, but that it would be impractical, and we were warning you that if it's less than 15 days, we're not even going to have it on our agenda. That was my suggestion, so I just wanted to clarify that.
Bill, let me let you off the hook. We weren't referring to any oral comment you made in Cairo. We're referring to the last letter from the GAC signed by the chairman saying that there would be responses filed if we did this. I mean, that's all.
Any other requests for the floor? Germany.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I had one more question regarding our geographic names discussion before, and I just want to make aware one issue that may be not so aware in the community here. That is the question of geographic names, and that in many countries there's not the central government responsible, but local governments like city mayors and states, federal states, and these governments have problems in getting access to information from ICANN. I say it in a very general way, because they are normally not part of the ICANN community, and for a GAC member, it is a bit difficult to exchange and give de facto legal advice what means in the guidebook page 318, how do I have to interpret it? Therefore, my request is, does ICANN have some possibilities or facilities to, in respect of this these communities to inform them in a separate way or whatever, that they can be aware of the problems they are now facing, because sometimes it's a passive one. The applicant knows what he has to do and he is involved in the discussion. Governments sometimes are confronted with these issues and don't know what would be the adequate answer, and they don't know perfectly what is in the guidebook, and they have the same problems on this respect. Thank you.
Are there any more requests for the floor?
I wonder whether we shouldn't move forward from here and to looking at the suggestions that some of us have made about taking this forward. I was wanting to propose something like a 13-page analysis that sets out the exchanges between us and the progress that's been made in relation to geographic names. People listening earlier may have formed the impression that the GAC are simply sending the same letter to us over and over again and we're not receiving it, which, of course, what's happened is the parties have substantially changed their positions in relation to geographic names, and the analysis of that is very complex, starting from the very general principle that you mentioned earlier. Whether or not we need to set up a full day or a day and a half, and I can just report the experience that the board had in terms of concentrating on this at the Trondheim workshop was for us very helpful. We actually do think there are only a limited list of issues, and we've moved from an entire objection based on geographic names now to much more around the objection process and various other issues. And you listed earlier Germany, all the progress, the agreement that's been made, and there seems to be acceptance by the GAC that its original claim for protection at the second level has moved, and so on. So, I mean, we have actually made considerable progress on these issues, and I just wonder whether, Heather, you know, if we scheduled a day or a day and a half or 2 days at some stage between now and San Francisco, that might work. It certainly worked very well for the board coming to grips with these issues.
Thank you for that suggestion. I see a little bit of nodding. So I think that means that we are open to doing that, and we appreciate the offer to continue in that spirit. Right. Norway.
Thank you, Chair. Just for clarification, are we moving towards a little bit on this ANT review team issue, or?
We certainly can. Peter?
Sure.
I believe there were a couple of issues that colleagues wanted to raise. So, Norway, you can start.
Thank you. This relates a little bit to the Norwegian input to comments to the ANT review team recommendations. In our comment, we just made a brief note regarding your plans based on the recommendations in the President's Strategy Committee regarding exploring ways for ICANN to for a legal international legal entity established outside California. So I just wanted, if there is an update, have the board discussed this since then, just the status, basically, if that has been discussed as an issue. Thank you.
No, that hasn't been discussed by the board, and I'm not sure exactly how the recommendation coming. I can't recall quite now how the recommendation coming up from the ATRT is going to do that. But once we get that, we will certainly pay careful attention to the recommendation.
France, please.
Christian Tison from the French Ministry of Foreign Affairs. This is also a point we raised in our comments, and we would like this to be taken into account. Thank you.
United Kingdom.
Thanks. As we're on the topic of the ANT review team, I just wanted to express our anxiety in the UK that the recommendations from the review team are implemented as soon as possible, and that you don't hold back on ones that specific recommendations that can be implemented fairly speedily without too much complex process to go through, or legal course, or whatever that might be required. So those recommendations that can be implemented quickly are done so, are not contingent on more difficult stuff being resolved later on, so that we can, in our engagements internationally with the ITU and in the UN, this is a point I just wanted to underscore as well. We do have multiple international dossiers, a number of us, and we were active in the UN speaking for them for the multi-stakeholder approach to internet governance, and in the ITU and elsewhere. So what I wanted to say was we would like to sort of update interlocutors. You know, ICANN has picked up this recommendation. It's already going ahead. Other stuff requires more more detailed planning. It's going to take a little while. But we don't want everything to sort of slow up to into a one package that is delivered at the end of 6 months. We would be really, really disappointed if that were the approach to be taken. Thanks.
Can I just interject and say that we haven't received the recommendation, so we haven't actually started considering that. But quite clearly, it would be a great mistake, I think, for us to hold all them up and try and pass them as a package. They cover so many areas that would just make an enormous block in the ICANN system. I do take the point about wanting reporting to your interlocutors, and maybe we can set that up as part of the ATRT page that's currently listing. Has been listing the activities of the work on the same. We have the affirmation of commitments page. I'm sure we can set up some kind of reporting mechanism, and perhaps just list the recommendations, and then, you know, we can have a big tick alongside them as they go off, or the date of implementation. I absolutely agree that as much communication about that as possible. What the board has stressed in having had a preliminary contact with the ATRT about the sort of doing a sanity check on the recommendations, which was, I think, was helpful to the team, was to, the board in return said, look, the most useful thing you can give to us with those recommendations is some sense of the priority of them. Because in some cases, the highest priority will be some of the biggest changes, and that they will involve, obviously, substantial budget, and maybe even some bylaw issues to be changed. So there will have to be a reasonably comprehensive implementation program developed. For my personal preference, obviously, well, one of the things we would do is pick off the cheap and the easy and do them straight away. There's no reason at all not to if it's a recommendation that we've accepted, you know, to get on with it. Thanks.
I have Norway and then Denmark.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, I would also like to re-emphasize on the issue that UK raised. That's some of the recommendations we, from the Norwegian perspective, we see as very urgent, and we also would give you the heads up here that this is that you some of the recommendations would probably need to be addressed fairly quickly. So just keep that in mind. Thank you.
Denmark. Thank you. I would like to first echo France and Norway for the PSC recommendation about the internationalization of ICANN, because we also wrote that in our comments to the ATRT. And also one issue we raised is the implementation issue that has just been raised that we also agree with. Thank you.
Dennis.
Yes, thank you, Peter. As Peter's pointed out, we haven't yet received and carefully considered the ATRT report, and we will, of course. So I'm speaking personally, if I may. I think the report is terrific, and I think the recommendations are very much to the point. And we've already started work, even before the report, on a number of areas. Training, better publication of documents, supporting the decisions, and so on. So I would expect, but I can't speak for the board, I would expect that when we get the report, the new BGC will take the report and will map out an implementation plan, will prioritize those things that can be done immediately. Some of them may be done by the time we get the report. And we'll publish that, and we will have metrics to show how rapidly we're progressing against that. Some of them, I think, will be done within weeks, and some of the more complicated ones will take a year or 18 months or whatever. But certainly I would be confident, and again, I'm only speaking for myself, that before the next review in 2 years' time after the receipt of the report, all those things that can be implemented will have been implemented. Now, there's some tricky things in there, but I'm just speaking for myself. I think it's a terrific report, and it gives us a wonderful opportunity to just take it and do it. So, you know, I just want to give you a sense, and a lot of board members have that sense, that we're going to run with this and make it happen, and you need not be concerned that we're going to be in any way hesitant. We will have to examine it to make sure that some of these things are really implementable at a reasonable cost and within our bylaws. But the majority, I think, can, and I think they will be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. With that, I think we're approaching the end of our session. So unless there's anything from the board side that you would like to flag.
Well, I think we should be. We're having a meeting tomorrow morning, in fact, at 8 o'clock to start the discussion about some board votes on Friday, which may well be counter to GAC advice. So I'm not. Is this something that you want to talk about now, or should we leave that till 8 o'clock tomorrow morning for those who are participating?
I think we can discuss it at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Yes, I see some confused colleagues. It's a time that's just been set, so have a look at your email for the details. but we will be meeting in this room at 8 a.m.
Great. And Heather, may I make a quick remark and just thank all the participants in the GAC for, in many cases, your years and years of work on this and other important topics, and certainly in many cases, in the case of the guidebook relating to new GDLTs, there have been changes made from what the GNSO recommended and private sector groups recommended to accommodate concerns that you've had. And seek to address those, whether those are intellectual property related, whether those are geopolitical, geographical names, et cetera. But I just want to thank you very, very much for your goodwill and your exceptional efforts. Thank you very much.
And let me thank the board for coming today. We always appreciate you spending time to meet with us, and we'll see you in the corridors.
Tomorrow morning.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.